Mandy Pope is a breeder, an owner, an equestrian. She's also a collector, but not of fine art or vintage wine, but of great broodmares. Since 2001, she has purchased some of the greatest mares ever to race at the fall breeding stock sales at Fasig Tipton and Keeneland. And she was at it again this year, purchasing Champion Songbird for $9.5 million at Fasig Tipton. We're pleased to have Mandy Pope as this week's guest on the Thoroughbred Daily News podcast, brought to you by TaylorMade.
Why do TaylorMade horses sell for nearly double the market average? A history of success, honesty, and hard work. For over 40 years, buyers and sellers alike have trusted TaylorMade as the industry's top source for high-quality thoroughbreds and friendly service. While sellers get top dollar for their horses, buyers are rewarded for top results on the track. From sale toppers to Grade 1 winners to Breeders' Cup champions, think TaylorMade, the worldwide leader in thoroughbred sales and marketing.
This is Bill Finley, the host of the TDN podcast. Mandy Pope's love affair with horses doesn't necessarily start with the racetrack, but with show horses. Mandy, it seems your passion has always been horses. You even rode in the National Horse Show at Madison Square Garden in 1979. Were you just that typical horse-crazy little girl growing up?
I was. I was horse-crazy from the time I was 4 years old.
Well, certainly that started young. Were you riding that young at 4 years old?
Yes, I got on my first horse at 4, and then I think I started going to Pony Club when I was 5.
Well, certainly got a good start in that, and certainly early. Now, before you seriously started buying horses, you also worked with the broodmares at Kinsman Farm of the Steinbrenner family and managed broodmares and stallions at Heatherhill Farm. I can't imagine you did that for the money. Was it just more to learn the business? And in those jobs where you kind of have to get your hands dirty, what did you learn?
Well, a couple of things. Actually, I did need the money for some spending money.
Okay.
So at that point, my parents were helping me. I had show horses, and my parents were helping with the horsey costs, but I needed my own spending money.
Okay.
So, and as far as what I did, I started just as your average groom, cleaning stalls, sweeping shed rows, sweeping driveways, raking, leading horses in and out, all the normal routine things that grooms do for broodmares.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, you and your father, John, opened Whisper Hill Farm in 1982, but it wasn't until 2011 when you made a big splash at the sales, buying a mare by the name of Silvery Starlet for $1.1 million. What made you dive into, guess what we would call the deep end of the pool, so to speak, at that point in time in your life and your career in the horse business?
Well, at that point in time, a lot of personal things had taken place, and I was able, it was the first time that I had the finances to be able to do that.
Okay. Now, your pattern ever since has been not so much to seek quantity, but quality, as you have bought some of the greatest race mares of modern times at the sales in recent years. So, Mandy, why that strategy? Why do you prefer that over a little more diversification?
Well, to begin with, I started with buying my first brood mare in 1982.
Okay.
And I probably at one point had 25 or so. Compared to the mares I'm buying now, they would have been considered moderate mares.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't making any headway with making a profit or creating good resources, but I still had the expenses. So I decided if you're going to spend the money anyway, you might as well upgrade and get the best that you could afford. And I started being able to afford better horses.
Okay. Now, every fall at the Keeneland and Fasig Tipton sale, there are so many top broodmare prospects. How do you pick the ones that you like and eventually buy? What do you see in them that they stand out among so many other top horses? What do you see in them that they catch your eye and you're willing to write that big check for them?
Obviously, I start by going through the catalogs before I ever get to the sales. And most of the big mares everyone knows, but you dive into all the particulars down to what were their buyer numbers, what were their rag numbers that they ran, what was the rest of the family like, did anybody in the rest of the family have any good racing numbers that you could refer to. And then once you go through that, then you go through and you start and you just start looking at horses, looking at a lot of broodmares. And it all works out when the ones that are the really great ones are also the ones that have that special presence that physically and emotionally attracts you to them.
Now, speaking of that, I read that when you get around the sales barns, one of the things that you like to do is that you believe it's important to just watch the horses, these broodmares, watch their demeanor and their behavior. And can you talk more about that? And why do you think that's an important trait in a horse in the sense that it will help it become a good broodmare?
I think it's very important to know if they are anxious when they're in the stall, if they're cribbing, stall walking, pawing, anything that shows anxiety, that kind of temperament. Because when they have a baby, some of them settle down, but not all of them. Mm-hmm. And you don't want a stall walking mare to stall walk on one of your expensive foals. So it's just another way of dialing in to what exactly you're getting.
Well, we'll be back with more from Mandy Pope, but first this word from our friends at TaylorMade.
TaylorMade, where customer success is our primary focus.
Ladies and gentlemen, we present Harvard of Grace.
7-10, you want to get 10 million, Hunter, right here, ready to get out of the mat. That's the way now, 10. 10-10, you ready to get out of the mat, ready to get 10. Bruce, right here, $10 million even.
TaylorMade, where customer success is our primary focus. But don't take our word for it. Here's what some of our most satisfied customers have to say.
This is Brian Kahn, Los Angeles, California. I've been associated with, worked for, and been a client of TaylorMade and the TaylorMade family for close to 30 years now. Had great success with them. They've always been transparent and honest, and I always felt I was getting the right end of the deal with them. Highly recommend their services, from boarding, public sales, private sales. I've used all. All have been a success and a pleasure to deal with.
Here's longtime TaylorMade client Rick Porter of Fox Hill Farms, owner of numerous champions and Grade 1 winners, such as 2011 Horse of the Year, Havre de Grace.
I've been doing business with TaylorMade for over 20 years. Everyone knows they are the best sellers at auction, but they have also done great work for me in the private market. They have an unbelievable network that can help you buy or sell privately in a very professional and transparent way. I wish I had these guys working for me when I was in the car business.
Discover what TaylorMade can do for you. Visit TaylorMadeFarm.com.
Folks, hold your applause here when this hammer falls, please. Let's get the mayor out of the ring.
10-1, I need to get out of the bag. Thank you. They done, Tom? Got to go. $10,100,000. He's through. Well, thank him for what he did do. You made us a great underbidder. Bruce, right here, $10 million even. Bruce's
thank you
very side,
much
thank
indeed.
You.
Mr. Porter, thank you so much, and remind me never to play poker with you. Thank you, folks. That was a wonderful tribute to this beautiful mare, and we wish the buyer every success in her future.
That buyer was Mandy Pope, and it was 2012 when she shocked the racing world and paid a record $10 million for Havre de Grace. Mandy, besides the obvious that she was a great racehorse, what did you like about her?
She had the look of eagles, actually, in her eyes and in the way her ears were. She would stand out there time after time from being brought out and would pretty much stay in the same pose. Her ears up, her eyes forward and looking at everything. And she noticed everything. She noticed people walking around her. If a plane would fly overhead, she would look up and watch the plane. So she was very intuitive to everything that's going around her, but yet kept her presence together and would stand perfectly still and not let any of it bother her.
Now take us through the bidding process. I imagine that it's both exhilarating and nerve-wracking at the same time. Did it literally make your hands sweat a little bit? What is it like to be involved in a bidding war that gets into eight figures?
Well, it definitely gets your heart rate way up.
I bet.
For sure. And it's very nerve-wracking. And, you know, you keep, when you make one more bid, you hold your breath and you're saying, oh, please, don't, nobody else bid. Please don't. And then they do. And so then you have to think for a minute and decide if you're going to do it again.
Mm-hmm.
And go through the same, a lot of anxiety involved. I mean, it's very thrilling, but it's also very anxious at the same time.
When it's all over, do you just let out a deep breath and have a big smile on your face? Or are there any second guessing, like, oh my God, what did I just do?
Well, usually before I have time to do that, the people are there with the ticket for me to sign, mm-hmm. and then the photographers are right there. So after that, then it's like, oh my God, what did I just do?
Okay. Now, Mandy, the very next day you spent $4.2 million on Kentucky Oaks winner Plum Pretty at Keeneland. Do you ever feel like an art collector, just like I mentioned in the beginning, or someone who buys fine wines? Are you buying Picassos and Da Vinci's? And do you think you probably get the same feel and thrill that those sort of people get when they buy what you are buying, masterpieces, at auction?
Well, of course, I've never been in that position, nor do I know anyone in that position, but they would be very lucky if they get the thrill that I get, so I'm sure that they do.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure it's very similar, although they don't have to worry about theirs going out at night and getting hurt.
Right.
They just have to worry that no one walks in the house and steals it.
There you go.
Their possessions are a lot more safe and secure than mine.
Okay. Now, Mandy, the next step, of course, is picking the sires that you breed these fabulous mares to. And could you take us through the process of how you do that? How much do you rely on some of your advisors like Kathy and Wayne Sweezy? How much do you do this for yourself? What's the secret to picking when you buy a $10 million or a $9.5 million mare, finding that perfect sire for that broodmare?
It's a lot of work and a lot of time. It certainly doesn't happen overnight, but I'll go through their pedigrees and Wayne will, and we have another pedigree advisor that works with us. And we all study up on the pedigrees, and then we meet at Wayne's office, and our pedigree advisor is very experienced at using all the software programs, mm-hmm. that are available, Enix, Goldmine, everything that's out there. He knows how to use, and we use all of it. And it can take you in different directions, but often it helps us to narrow it down to just a couple of horses. And then we take into consideration confirmation of the mare and the stallion, and then we make our final decision.
Okay. A year later, you were back at it again for the second straight year. You bought the most expensive broodmare sold at auction, this time for a Galileo filly by the name of Better, Better, Better. And, Mandy, this one was a little bit different than some of your other patterns. She was a beautifully bred horse by Galileo. It was in foal to Warfront. But unlike Songbird and Haverty Grace, she was not a huge star on the racetrack. What did you like about her, and why did this time did you sort of go against the grain of your normal pattern of picking out horses that showed how brilliant they were at the races?
Well, as we all know, great racehorses don't necessarily come from great racemares. I think a lot of them also come from mares that have great pedigree. And Better, 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 she was a grade two or grade three stakes place, so she did have ability to run. And her family was just so deep. When you run her pedigree, it's like 8 pages long.
Mm-hmm.
With black type horses all through it. So it's a very deep family. So it was by intent a little bit of a different way of trying to gather up some good mares.
Okay. Now, Mandy, you once said that your strategy was to sell the colts and keep the fillies. But for the most part, it seems like you really haven't sold a whole lot of the offspring of these big stars. So kind of what is the plan and what is the strategy so far as who do you sell and why, who do you keep and why?
Well, basically, for the first couple of years, my plan was to sell colts. A couple went to the sales ring and did not get sold. And as we all know, these are living, breathing animals that are not perfect. And things happen to them. And to go to the sales or to sell them privately, everything has to be good, you know, because just the animal standing there, he has to scope well, he has to have perfect x-rays, and everything has to fall in place. And a lot of times, it doesn't fall in place at that particular point in time. And so some of them needed more time, other ones had some x-ray issues, and you still think that they're going to be great horses with great potential, and you're not willing to sell them for a big discount because they didn't have perfect x-rays.
Mm-hmm.
So you either make the decision to accept the discounted price or you make the decision to keep them.
Okay.
And I basically made the decision to keep them.
Okay. Now, but will the plan going forward, as long as there are no little kinks in the armor, so to speak, and we know that can happen with any horse, but are you more prone to sell horses as yearlings or to race them, or is that yet to be decided?
It is a process in the making.
Mm-hmm.
We are keeping more yearlings. This year, I picked up four that had absolutely no problems that could have been sold for a lot of money, but I decided to keep them. And we've actually bought less yearlings this year than I have in the past. So going forward, I imagine you're going to see me spending less money at the yearling sales because I have my own homebred.
Interesting. Interesting. Okay. Now, Mandy, since you are keeping horses and racing them, what are your goals on the racetrack? And I know you're not a big believer in pushing young horses, which might mean that, of course you'd like to win the Kentucky Derby, but maybe a Breeders' Cup Classic might be more of a goal. So so far as Whisper Hill Farms racing stable, what are some of the things that you want to accomplish in this sport?
Absolutely. The Breeders' Cup, to me, those races are my goals. Whether they're sprinters, turf, distance, whatever type they are, but it's the year in Breeders' Cup. So if I happen to have a horse where the timing is right for the Derby or for the Oaks, that will be great, but I'm not going to push one with that in mind.
Well, TaylorMade was the one that consigned Songbird at the sales this year, and they are the ones that also are the sponsors of this podcast, and we're pleased to have them as our presenter. A word from TaylorMade, and when we're done, we'll be back with Mandy Pope.
And here it is. The 37-year wait is over. American Foal is finally the one. American Foal has won the Triple Crown.
Over the past four decades, TaylorMade has risen from a small boarding operation to the worldwide leader in thoroughbred sales and marketing. Here's Hall of Fame trainer Jerry Hollendorfer.
TaylorMade sales follow many horses that are training at the racetrack, and they are particularly adept at evaluating mares and placing them with a proper stallion after their racing careers are over. They are very straightforward and are also experts on confirmation of younger weanlings and yearlings.
My name is Tia Andrini, and I am from San Mateo, California. I've been doing business with TaylorMade for about a year now, and it's been one great experience after another. It started with my first TaylorMade venture when I bought an interest in the filly Catherine Sophia, which ultimately landed me 3 weeks later in the middle of the winner's circle of the 2016 Kentucky Oaks with her. The TaylorMade team is a group of truly outstanding individuals. They are knowledgeable, professional, and completely customer service driven. To me, the TaylorMade name epitomizes the term trusted advisor. That is exactly what they are, and I am very proud to be associated and doing business with them.
Discover what TaylorMade can do for you. Visit TaylorMadeFarm.com.
And they're into the stretch, and there goes Groupie Doll. And Rajiv Mirage lets her loose one last time, and look at her take off. She was dead last up the backstretch, but Groupie Doll goes out in glory at Gulfstream. She's won the Hurricane Birdie by 6 lengths over five-star Mama.
You just heard Groupie Doll winning the 2014 Hurricane Birdie Stakes. She was another one of your big purchases, costing $3.1 million. But this time, Buff Bradley, the trainer, talked you into racing her two more times after the sale. She was fourth in the Cigar Mile and then finished her career with that win in the Hurricane Birdie. And just watching you in the winner's circle and some of the things I've read, seems like it was a thrill of a lifetime that you got out of that. So some of these great mares retire relatively young. Would you ever consider buying one and continuing to race them?
I have, absolutely. The ones that I bought so far, when I had them vetted, they did have some issues where racing them was not in their best benefit. So I have not done that, but I would be delighted if I ended up with one of them that could go on and race some more.
Okay.
Honor here, we're going to get everybody to 9,500, 9,700,000, all of it, 9,795, everybody to 9,700, yet 9,5, everybody to 7,000, everybody to 9,700,000, 9,5, to get 9,600,000, honor, at 9,5, 9,6, here we go, 9,5, to get 9,600, here we're going to get everybody to get all done, and I have it to get 9,5, to get $9,600,000, and... Thank you. Thank you up there. Bruce, $9,500,000.
Congratulations, Mr. Porter, and thank you once again.
That was the $9.5 million sale of Songbird to Mandy Pope you just heard. Now, Mandy, you were relatively quiet for a few years until you made big headlines again this year with your purchase of Songbird for $9.5 million. Any reason you took a step back for a couple of years?
Well, I was in the process of doing a lot of building on the farm. We built a little training barn, and we just are in the process of finishing up another barn. And I also spent a little bit more money on yearling than I had also. So that kind of took away the money from the broodmares. And last year I spent a bit of money on broodmares, but just not on one big one.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of just spread it out a little bit more. With my big purchase last year was Unbridled Bill.
Okay. And how much did you pay for her?
I believe she was around 3.2.
Okay.
3.4, somewhere in there.
Mm-hmm.
Expensive enough.
I guess so.
For
yes.
Sure.
Okay.
So, but I'm very excited with Unique Bella out in California,
mm-hmm.
even though she did not do particularly well in the Breeders' Cup this year, but that was just her second race back after a long layoff. So I'm hoping that she's going to have quite a big year next year.
Okay. Okay, well, very talented filly there. Now, this year, if you wanted a superstar mare, there were plenty to choose from, among them Teppan and Stellar Wind. So, and also at one point, Lady Eli was up for auction, but they had to withdraw her because she was injured in the Breeders' Cup. So, of the so-called big three, Teppan, Stellar Wind, and Songbird, why was Songbird the one you wanted? What caught you? What made you decide to pick her over the other two? Not asking you to disparage the other two, but you couldn't have gone wrong with
Correct.
Purchasing any one of the three.
Correct. I thought she was the bigger, better balanced of them. And quite honestly, it's not quite all that technical. Songbird was the first one of those to sell.
Okay.
And so I had to make a choice, either I'm going to go for her or not when, the bidding went up mm-hmm. and I decided that I really liked her, but there was no guarantee that I would end up with the other two. So, and I had a budget of X amount of money, mm-hmm. and I was hoping to buy two.
Okay.
But I spent more for Songbird than I had wanted or had planned on, and the other two went for more than what my budget could go for.
Okay.
When people say I don't have a budget, I do. I just spent it all on one horse.
Okay, gotcha. Now, Songbird plus Havre de Grace, that's $19.5 million for two horses. I want to get into this idea of the budget. So you made history by buying the two most expensive broodmare prospects ever to sell at auction. And you talked about a budget, and it sounds like with Songbird, I don't know what you had in mind, but it sounds like you did go over your budget a little bit. Is that your nature, Mandy? If you really want something bad enough, will you pay whatever it takes to get it?
No, I don't know. If Songbird had gone up one more over that bid, I would not have been there.
Okay.
So I had it was pretty large, but I'm not just gonna, people think that I do, but I'm not gonna, it's crazy enough what I do, granted that, but there is a bottom to it.
Okay. Now, Mandy, with all these wonderful mares and some of the yearlings that you've bought, I mean, the sky's the limit for the future of your stable. Are you interested in developing a stallion? Could you see if one of these great mares produces a great racehorse, or if one of your yearlings turns out to be a superstar on the racetrack, which is bound to happen with the type of quality you're dealing with, will Whisper Hill get into the stallion business someday?
Only with a partner from that already has an established stallion operation.
Mm-hmm.
I will never have my own stallion operation. So just in partnership with other people.
Okay. Now, I know you live in Ocala, but you spend a lot of time in Florida. And when you go to the Sweezy's Farm, which is Timbertown Stables, where you board your mares, you look out at Songbird, Havre de Grace, Plum Pretty, Groupie Doll. That's almost like looking out at a living, breathing Hall of Fame. Can you just describe the thrill of looking out at this majestic group of mares, and how does that make you feel?
It's pretty overwhelming. I don't know, if you think of the perfect Christmas day with snow on the ground and this beautiful Christmas tree, and then you can see kind of angels in the clouds watching down on you. I feel like angels have been watching down on me, and that I've been very blessed and very lucky.
Mm-hmm. That's a beautiful way of putting it. Now, Mandy, as you said, you did spend some time buying some pretty expensive yearlings, and you've gone for $2.6 million for one this year at Keeneland, then another one for $1.45 million at Saratoga. So, that part of the stable looks like it's going to be a force in the future. How about picking out trainers? Who are going to train these young horses for you, and how have you decided upon that?
That's always an interesting process that... a hard one sometimes. I've tried a bunch of different trainers, and I like not having all my eggs in one basket, mm-hmm. just as trainers, for the most part, don't like having all their eggs in one client's basket. You need to be able to move horses around, and you have trainers in different tracks at different levels. So you need to be able to move the horses to the place in the spot where they need to be. So there's always going to be several trainers involved. And so this year right now, I've got a couple of nice horses that we sent down to Ralph next in the past week or so down to Palm Meadows,
mm-hmm.
A couple of two-year-olds. So we're looking forward to seeing those get started. And anyway, it just depends. We're sending some horses down the fairgrounds. We use Tom Amos, mm-hmm. and Buff Bradley.
Mm-hmm.
We're using Kent Sweezy.
Mm-hmm.
He's had a couple of horses for me. We've had horses with Todd Crutcher and Chad Brown. But I try not to have them too spaced out, but trying to figure out what situation is going to be best for the horse.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And another part that's important to me, which isn't to a lot of people, is I enjoy having a good friendship relationship with some of the trainers. So the smaller trainers like Ralph Nix and Buff and Tom, you get to spend time with the trainers and develop a friendship. And that's important to me.
Right. Right.
I enjoy that, and I think they enjoy that. And the bigger trainers are absolutely wonderful, but you're not going to have that kind of relationship with them.
Gotcha.
Which, in the end, doesn't make a horse better or not better or a trainer better or not better. But for me, it's part of trying to enjoy the entire journey of this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, Mandy, the again, we talked about this just roster of Hall of Famers, living, living legends that you look out upon. Have you now pretty much satisfied your needs for your broodmare band? Or if there's a big superstar back at the sales, and there will, of course there will be, if there's another horse that might go in the $8, $9, $10 million range up for sale at Face of Kipton or Keeneland next November, are you ready to pull out that wallet again? Or have you gotten to the point where, say, I've got what I want, I'm going to take a step back. You're going to continue to be a player.
You know, I can't tell you too much can happen between now and then.
Right.
So, right now, I would say I would be stepping back, and I've got a lot of nice young racehorses and potential racehorses out there that I want to enjoy. And like I said, I hope overall I'm just going to be spending less money in the future at sales and enjoying my homebred.
Mm-hmm. Well, with what you've got, you certainly have got the potential to have some fabulous, fabulous success on the racetrack, and maybe some success as well, or reselling some of these horses as yearlings. Mandy Pope, congratulations on all you've achieved so far, and wishing you well with all your future endeavors in horse racing. And thanks so much for taking the time out today to be our guest on the TDN podcast, brought to you by TaylorMade.